Hey, this is John Lee Dumas from EO Fire, and you're listening to Elective Rotation with Pharmacy Joe. You must be prepared to ignite.
What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 77. In this episode, I'll discuss an article that looks at the incidence of acute kidney injury in ICU patients receiving vancomycin and piperacillin tazobactam, answer the drug information question, should 2.5% dextrose ever be infused, and share a resource about G6PD deficiency. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode77. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. The Pharmacy Nation Slack group is a free community with other pharmacists from around the world collaborating using real-time messaging. I invite you to join me and the hundreds of other Pharmacy Nation members there. You can sign up at pharmacynation.org. The article I'd like to share on this show is titled Comparative Incidence of Acute Kidney Injury in Critically Ill Patients Receiving Vancomycin with Concomitant Piperacillin Tazobactam or Cefepime, a Retrospective Cohort Study. The lead author is Drayton Hammond, and this article was published online in Pharmacotherapy April 2016. Beta-lactam antibiotics are usually considered to have minimal significant side effects. Six recent studies have looked at the combination of piperacillin tazobactam with vancomycin in hospital patients. I have these studies linked in the show notes. Four of the studies associated an increase in the number of patients who developed acute kidney injury with concomitant piperacillin tazobactam and vancomycin versus vancomycin alone or with cefepime. Two of the studies suggested no difference in the incidence of AKI. However, very few critically ill patients were included in any of these six studies. The authors of this study designed a retrospective cohort study of critically ill patients to assess the incidence of AKI in patients who received vancomycin combined with piperacillin tazobactam versus vancomycin combined with cefepime. 122 patients who received combination therapy for at least 48 hours were reviewed. The patients were from medical, surgical, and neuroscience intensive care units within a single tertiary care hospital. The primary outcome was development of AKI during combination therapy or within 72 hours of completion of combination therapy. 37 out of the 122 patients developed AKI. In unadjusted and adjusted analyses, the incidence of AKI was similar in the piperacillin tazobactam group compared with the cefepime group. Secondary outcomes examined were ICU length of stay, hospital length of stay, AKI duration, and need for renal replacement therapy. The choice of cefepime versus piperacillin tazobactam was not a significant predictor of any of the secondary outcomes. The authors concluded that after adjusting for propensity to receive each of the treatment choices, no significant difference was found in the incidence of AKI development or other outcomes between the groups. The previously described finding that concomitant vancomycin and piperacillin tazobactam increases AKI in non-critically ill patients may not be generalizable to the critically ill population. Prospective evaluation of this hypothesis is warranted. I must say, when I read the first studies associating AKI with a combination of vancomycin and piperacillin tazobactam, I was quite disturbed. Beta-lactam antibiotics are not supposed to do nasty things like cause AKI, and avoiding the combination might increase the use of alternative antibiotics like linezolid and meropenem, which is undesirable for other reasons. After discussing this with my ID pharmacist, we decided the retrospective nature of the studies made the strength of the evidence insufficient to cause any change in practice. I'd be surprised if a prospective study was ever done using these two generic drugs to conclusively determine whether the incidence of AKI is increased. In your practice, how do you handle conflicting retrospective studies that can only suggest association and not prove causation? Leave a comment at the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode77 or send me an email, joe@pharmacyjoe.com. The drug information question for this episode is, should 2.5% dextrose ever be infused? And my answer is almost never. Shout out to Nephrology Jim for finding the one type of patient such an order would make sense in. When treating acute hypernatremia, which is a rare condition to begin with, 5% dextrose is infused rapidly. As the rate of dextrose infusion increases, glycosuria may develop, which will increase electrolyte-free water loss and make correction of the serum sodium more difficult. This may be managed by slowing the rate of dextrose infusion, but that may also slow the rate of sodium correction. Simply controlling the plasma glucose with insulin may be dangerous. If the glucose is lowered rapidly, this will change the serum osmolality and could potentiate cerebral edema, just like rapidly lowering the sodium could. In such a scenario, dextrose 2.5% may need to be administered. Unfortunately, the data for this is limited to expert opinion, of which I have linked in the show notes. I could only find a brief mention in the up-to-date monograph on hypernatremia and also an article on Medscape regarding hypotonic solutions in pediatric patients. The risk with administration of hypotonic fluids is hemolysis. Death has occurred with the administration of sterile water, IV. Hemolysis of about 25% appears to occur with quarter normal saline. Whether hemolysis would occur with 2.5% dextrose is unknown as far as I can tell. If using this therapy, I'd strongly consider monitoring the H&H frequently, looking for signs of hemolysis. And finally, the resource for this episode is the website g6pd.org. There's a list of unsafe and low-risk medications to consider with patients who have G6PD deficiency. And in addition to these lists, this website hosts links to useful articles that contain information about G6PD deficiency for healthcare professionals. Listeners can support the show when they shop using my link to Amazon. It will cost you no extra money, and I will receive a small commission from Amazon. Just use my link, pharmacyjoe.com/shop, to take you to Amazon each time you shop. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.